one of the things that really is striking is that the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan are a totally different kind of warfare from what we've ever seen before for a couple reasons. First is that more veterans are coming home seemingly alive and well than ever before. In World War II, if you were wounded in battle, you had a 1 in 3 chance of dying from your wounds. In Vietnam, it was 1 in 4. Now it's something closer to 1 in 20.
Yeah.
So we have a lot more people because of better medical technology who are surviving. And then above that, there's the body armor and armored vehicles that prevent people from ever being officially wounded in the first place. So we have people who are experiencing lots of combat, but coming home in one piece, even though inside they may be in pieces.
And in some ways, they may come home in some degree safely, but there are a lot of this isn't something that it can be years later.
Right. I'm actually there's a murder trial going on right now in Alabama of one of the soldiers that I wrote about. He came home from war in 2006. It wasn't until 2008 that combat and sort of the downward spiral that it started led to him murdering a young college woman.
Huh.
So it's an important issue and one that we don't really know the scope of right now.
And as I was reading through the book, I'm, of course, thinking about all the high rates of suicides that we've seen among veterans, among folks returning back. And I mean, you can't help but think that there's some kind of tie here.
Absolutely. Suicide and homicide are different sides of the same coin, and they can be helped by the same types of programs, you know, good reintegration, early detection, treatment for soldiers who need it. You know, and the Army doesn't track, or at least doesn't make public, the number of violent crimes by soldiers, but I wouldn't be surprised if it tracks very closely to what we've been seeing with the mounting numbers of suicides.
One of the things that I liked about your book is that you don't say, "Hey, Veterans Affairs, why aren't you doing more?" Because in many ways, as you said, this is so new to all of us. VA really struggling to figure out. Hold on, how do we deal with this? This is something new for them as well.
Well, and one of the main barriers to care is not necessarily the VA, because a lot of these guys are still active duty when this is all happening. And it's not necessarily the Army, because the Army is slowly starting to learn how to do this better as the wars go on. But still, there is this culture within the Army, especially in really tough sort of fighting units, that you are capable of handling anything. You know, they drill that into recruits again and again.
Yeah.
And in a way, that acts that keeps people from seeking help, because their culture, their friends, their community sees it as a sign of weakness, and ultimately, I think there's still a belief that it's a fake disorder.
And there is this and I hate to use the term because it's degrading of the soldiers, almost machismo, almost, you know, and they need that to get through what they get through. But then they come back and hold on, we're in a different place, and if you're not seeking help, then you're not seeking help.
Right. And so one of the first steps that the Marines and to some extent small parts of the Army have started to do is, instead of calling PTSD post-traumatic stress disorder, which is a disorder, they're starting to classify it as what they call a combat stress injury.
Yeah.
Because it's not a disorder any more than bleeding when you get shot is a disorder. It's an actual physical injury that, thanks to modern technology, we can see with brain scans. Combat and the stress of it physically changes your brain. So if you can get soldiers to understand, hey, I'm wounded, I need to go get care. You know, they understand that. It's no longer something that they have to fear, you know, that they're going crazy or something.
One of the people who you really highlight who's helped bring about that mind shift, that change in thinking, is General Mark Graham. Talk a little bit about him and his role in changing this mode of thinking.
Well, he was a career Army guy, and certainly not anyone who has ever really involved in behavioral health beyond, you know, caring for the soldiers that were under him. But then two really striking things happened to him during the Iraq War. He had two grown sons. Both were Army officers. One of them was killed in a roadside bomb blast, and only a few months apart from the other one, committing suicide because he was depressed but didn't want to publicly get treatment because of fear of the stigma. And those things really, they shook the general and his family to their core. And he and his wife emerged from it deciding that if they could do something, if some good could come out of it, maybe they could go on. And so they really became outspoken advocates for suicide prevention. But that naturally led to PTSD, to better care for soldiers returning and reintegrating home. And that led to really trying to fix the things that were broken that created so much violence at Fort Carson.
One of your chapters is called Invisible Wounds, and I thought it was very, there are these wounds that we don't see and therefore almost discount.
Right, because, you know, human beings are very complex. We can fake PTSD if we want to, and certainly, you know, I'm sure it happens. So, you know, if you have your leg blown off, no one questions that you had your leg blown off. But if you have these psychological injuries, I think a lot of us, especially those of us who have not experienced combat and what it really means, it's easy to discount that.
Yeah.
But one thing that's really interesting is, and this is all very new, but it you can now see PTSD through brain scans, not just MRIs, but very new kinds of scans that actually measure sort of the electromagnetic signature. And it's there, and it looks the same in every brain. So we're getting to a point where we can diagnose it like you could diagnose a virus.
Talk a little bit about, well, first off, are we getting better? Is VA, is the Army, are all the organizations, is the Pentagon getting better at recognizing this, dealing with it? We've had a couple people on the show talking about it from the suicide side, but is there hope?
You know, absolutely there's hope. Is it a really, really, really tough problem? Yes. You know, is there one thing that people can do to just cure it? No. But are there passionate, caring people working both on civilian and military sides of the problem that are really trying to give these folks who fought for the country all they can? You know, I believe that there are. In some cases, people slip through the cracks, and so many people slip through the cracks that it really became a systematic problem. But slowly, people are trying to redesign the system so that that doesn't happen.
This had to be a difficult story to write.
The Army doesn't exactly want to talk about soldiers coming home and killing people.
Yeah, well, but not only that, as you're talking to these folks, and clearly you did talk to them, you're hearing these stories, and all of us reporters, you know, the reason we get into this is because we think people can make a difference, and you had to just want to reach across and say, how can I help?
Yeah, no kidding. And the hardest thing for me to realize is that even though I was talking to these guys at length, I would never really know what they'd gone through.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's such so different to experience war than to hear about it, even if you hear about it in the most gruesome detail. So, you know, what I try to console myself with is make a record. Try and make it as accurate as possible. Will you ever really understand this story? No. But at least it'll be left there for others to pick up and ponder.
Tell the story. And how did you get, how did you start, what was the hook for you?
You know, it was my wife. My wife is a defense attorney in Colorado Springs, and as more and more soldiers got in trouble, more and more of their cases came across her desk. I mean, obviously, we're not allowed, even as husband and wife, to talk about specifics.
Right.
But she would mention this to me. And mentioned that, you know, when she was talking to these guys in jail, a lot of them would just melt down and start telling her about some of their war experiences. And so I knew that that was important, and I knew that we as journalists weren't getting at that. We weren't connecting the war experience to the home experience, and we needed to do that.
And I always say one of the great things is that we as a culture, we're not putting this group of soldiers through what we put the Vietnam group of soldiers through, but there are other things that they have to deal with, and we're just, in a way, we're almost fighting that last war. We're still trying to deal with those wounds, and so there's a whole host of new ones that we have
right.
to deal with.
You know, and people have really made a conscious effort. I mean, in Colorado Springs, certainly, which is a real patriotic town, but across the country, I've seen it, to make these guys feel welcome, to try and erase the mistakes of Vietnam. But, you know, there's another thing that several soldiers I've talked to find really alienating, and that's that there's such a small amount of our population that is experiencing these wars and fighting them so intensely, and then they come home and realize that life for the rest of us has just gone on as if nothing really matters. They've made these big sacrifices, and we just sort of go about our days. And I feel like a lot of them end up feeling really alienated, like they don't really belong here anymore.